Oh, well, thanks for inviting me, although I haven't got the questions, so I might hold the thanks for inviting me until later on. In case I get some hard questions, then I'll be saying I wish I didn't come at all, but we'll see how we go. 20 minutes, and then we'll have an opportunity to ask some questions. Before, we're sitting at our table, and we were talking about the pressures in the whole media environment, whether it's print, press, or radio, or indeed some of the conversation went to the TV. And indeed, CFA, in fact, the fire sector is no different. We're under enormous change at the moment, and that is, it's not specific to CFA. It is an issue that's happening pretty well globally. So what I want to talk about, I've got about a dozen slides, mainly pictures, so if you can't see them or you don't want to get a crook neck looking up, don't stress too much, but we'll get there. What I want to talk about is that there's two contexts that I'd like to discuss today. One is urban, and so the urban environment that we fight fires or attend to emergencies in, and the other is bushfire, or what I call natural environment. In both those environments, and understand that's our primary business that we do, our CFA, the sector, is being challenged in. So before I start, I need to give you a little bit of context, because people don't understand a bit about CFA, and to some extent it underpins some of the issues we have at the moment. CFA, whether you understand it or not, looks after 60% of Melbourne. So all those huge growth corridors in metropolitan Melbourne are serviced by CFA. All the regional centres, all the rural areas, all the country area of Victoria is all serviced by CFA. CFA has a response to 40,000 calls a year. Now, that's primary instances. Now, an example of that could be anything from a rubbish bin fire to certainly a significant event that we responded to recently with the SES into the floods of South Australia. Quite a big campaign type incident. So we look at the whole gamut of emergencies. The thing that people don't know is that the model that was established back, you know, in a sense way back in the 1950s, is 1,200 fire stations. And essentially it's a model where we sit in our sheds and wait for someone to give us a call and we go and respond. And essentially that's how the fire services around the world are modelled. And that's where the challenge is. We have a model that is built near on 100 years ago that if you look at the science, it is really challenged today. Let me take you on a little bit of a journey. So the first journey here is this, and it really highlights a problem that's occurring around the world. So the context I'm talking to you now is the urban space. So it's about attending house fires, structure fires, hazardous material incidents, that type of stuff. And if you have a look here, in 2013, the Brits did a research, and if you look at those figures there, they've essentially looked at and established that structure fires have reduced by near on 50%. 50% reduction, and you start to think, why is that so? Professor Julius Sumner Miller, if those are old enough to know who he is, why is it so? Well, it is so because, and I look around here, and probably this is not a good example because I can't see a fire extinguisher, I can't see a smoke alarm, there is one? Ah, there is one. My apologies. It's a dry cam and it's not very good. But we won't go into that. But anyway. I should realise my audience, shouldn't I? Grandiose statements. But nonetheless. What I'm saying here is fire protection in the buildings now. The building industry is, in fact, now designed buildings for people to get out. They actually say to us, as a fire service, we don't want your firefighters entering buildings because we're designing for people to get out. And in a sense, what's happening in the UK, what they've done there, and think about this, 50% reduction in fires, governments have gone, we'll take 50% of your budget. And so it's had a huge impact in that particular country. So we're no different. I put this up here because we measure the fire, and it's important that you understand that in a fire service context in the urban space, we measure our performance by how quick we get on scene. So that's all we measure. So the fire service response in Victoria is essentially it's 8 minutes, so we're required in a hazard class 2 area to get on scene in 8 minutes. Again, where did 8 minutes come from? Why do we 8 minutes? So in Victoria, we have an ambulance service that is required to be on scene in 16 minutes. Yet, if you have a heart, any medical people in the room? If you have a heart attack now, you can probably be in a bit of trouble, but nonetheless, maybe some of us know CPR. if you're not intervening with CPR in the first 3 to 4 minutes, then you can probably, your chances of survival drop off significantly. So what the heck is 16 minutes in an ambulance service? Fire service is no different. The 8 minutes comes from a 1939 Riverdale report, again in England, where essentially scientists got together, had a meter by a meter by a meter box, put some material in it, put a match to it, stepped back, put a stopwatch on it, and in 8 minutes the thing went flash, whooshka, if you like, if you don't understand the terminology, well, flash is pretty easy. It flashed. And as a sense, we said, oh my goodness, we have to have a fire truck on scene in 8 minutes. That's how it's got to work. And so, if I can criticise our partner agency at the moment, the response time measure for the MFB is 7.7 minutes. Why 7.7 minutes? Because I have 0.3 of a minute to pull the truck up, get the hoses out and put water on it before it goes whooshka. Bizarre when you think about it, because here we have the science telling us that in reality, we can get whooshka happening in 2 minutes. And it quite often it assumes we're actually there at the receipt when the fire actually starts. I'd put to you that if a fire started out here and a structure fire anywhere out here, it may be that some people don't even see it. But all we're going to measure is the time that we take to get on scene. It's quite bizarre when you think about it. And so as a consequence, we have this anomaly where people are measuring us by when we get on scene in 8 minutes. If you still haven't got it, let me give you this example. A ladder truck, if you like, costs near on $2 million. A smoke alarm, let's buy a ladder truck. A smoke alarm costs $10. Depends where you go. You might get it for $5 at home, you know, give or take. You're getting a Chinese one or whatever. Tell me, which one's going to save your life? In reality, which one is going to save your life? And our example in the urban space is there's been a 50% reduction in fires in urban spaces around the world. In the UK, they're closing down fire stations. In the US, they're doing the same thing. After September 11, they've closed down fire houses. If you looked at the UK now, we had the chief officer of the chiefs of the Londonderry area come and talk to us recently, and he said, you know what we do now? He said, we go and knock on doors, and we do 80-odd thousand door knocks, go in, inspect people's homes. Not for fire hazards, but for trip hazards, for anything to do. So the Department of Human Services said, oh, you can actually get into houses. Can you go and check they've got a smoke alarm, they've got rails for elderly, that they've got proper food, etc. The fire service is now reaching out and doing those things. Why? To justify their existence in an environment where the whole world has changed, in a sense. So the traditional model of sitting in a fire station, waiting for someone to call, is it actually saving lives anymore? The traditional model, if you still want another example of the ambulance service responding in 6 minutes, within on scene in 16 minutes, and some of you people in the room are probably counting to death if they don't do it, then the reality is it's probably not impacting on life at all. It's what the ambulance service did to make sure for us, putting smoke alarms in, making sure we've got exit signs, making sure people get out, but the ambulance service making sure that they have defibrillators at the MCG, the safest spot. You've heard the story. MCG is the safest spot. So you get the context in the urban environment. So I think people understand it. It's interesting. If I went to the previous slide, this was a union bulletin put out. It was put out last week. And effectively, you read the first line there, effectively in the greater Manchester area, they sacked 1,200 firefighters because they're saying, actually, what are we getting? What value do we get out of this group? So it's interesting. This phenomenon is happening around the world. Let's go to another place, though. So I talked about urban, if you still get it. Let me take you to I'll call it bushfire. I actually want to talk about what I'll call about the natural environment. While urban is decreasing, while the urban events is decreasing significantly, and that's happening around the world, and remember, that's a model that we sit in a fire station waiting for something to come. What's actually increasing, again, globally, are natural disasters. Deirdre talked about earthquakes in New Zealand, you can talk about tsunamis, you can talk about floods that we're seeing here in Victoria, you can talk about bushfires, just about any natural disaster where they used to be quite infrequent or occur occasionally, you can just about pick up the paper somewhere in the world and realise that there is a natural disaster happening somewhere. And it's quite bizarre. But again, there's a realisation that CFA has 1,200 trucks sitting in a shed. And I listened to Deirdre talk before, and it's interesting, The change that happened for CFA is to tell people like Deirdre, to tell people like you, if the plan is if CFA doesn't exist, and if we turn up, treat it as a bonus. Now, when I first started in the job, I would be charged, disciplined if I said anything like that, because the theory was you need to give people confidence that we would be there if your house caught on fire. We would be there if the olive grove all started burning. We knew we wouldn't. And I'll give you a couple of quick examples. I'll hold that at fact. It's interesting. Indonesia, 230,000 people were killed in a tsunami. Let's run through a couple of those. I said their photos, and you don't get to see them because you get a sore neck. But I can show you later on if you like. And I can show you some great examples in Indonesia where local tradition was that they saved no fire services, no ambulance services, no police services, no nothing. Yet people were saved because of what they did to protect themselves. So if I lived here, Deirdre probably now knows that she needs to be, if she has a heart attack or a family has a heart attack, she can't wait for be a city person, wait for an ambulance. If she house catches on fire, she knows she's probably on her own. Locally, we might get a truck here in Clem, 15, 20 minutes? 10, sorry, don't want to undo it there. But when they turn up, they'll do an excellent, proficient job. No, quite seriously. We do a great job when we turn up, but understand there's a time gap when we turn up. Let me run through a queue. These are just classics for me. Hurricane Katrina, it's 2005. This is in the US. It has more fire trucks, more police cars, more ambulances, had more fire services than anywhere else on the planet. Yet still 1,800 people died as a result of the hurricane. It really, really frustrated. I spent a bit of time studying the US, and the picture at the bottom left-hand corner there is of people that are being displaced in New Orleans into a football stadium that had no food, no ablutions, as in toilets, water, basic sort of stuff. It really did challenge them because Americans have this can-do attitude. If you've got a fire, we'll get you a fire truck. We'll come and put it out. If you're going to have a heart attack, we'll have someone to come and... Actually, it didn't happen. And again, I can tell you some stories for the sake of time, and Rex will get the hook onto me. Actually, now I've got complete blockage. I don't know how to move that on. If anybody, do you want to have a play? Feel free. Doesn't really matter. I think you get the point. The quick story I'll give you is conscious of the time. Is there's a lady in Samoa, her name is Philomena.
Oopsie. All right. Oh, that wasn't me.
There's a lady in Samoa, her name is Philomena. Polynesian, and I've met Philomena, and she... There you go. I'll come back to Philomena in a moment.
Oh, do you want me to back?
No, that's fine. The Japanese, another highly capitalised, more fire trucks, quite a rich country, if you like. And people forget that over 10,000 people were killed. And I know we've got an SES here, but you know, an SES flood bloke is not going to stop that flood, is my point here. A CFA is not going to be able to, or emergency service, an ambulance. I've got to tell you, if you're standing in that vehicle there or anywhere near there, it's the decision you're about to make right now that will determine whether you live or die. Plan as if the emergency services don't exist, and if we turn up, treat it as a bonus. I'm also saying to you, our one and only measure, response time, is an absolute crock in both environments. Let me keep moving on. Let's hope I push the right button this time. We don't have to go too far for us in Victoria, because Victorians know this fact. Again, in 1983, a thing called Ash Wednesday happened. Does anybody know how many homes we lost? Come on. Kevin? Righto. We lost 2,000 homes in 1983. How many trucks did we have on the road? 455 in 83. If I go to 2,973 people died. 173 people died. 2,000 homes in 2009. How many trucks did we have on the road in 2009? Have a guess?
Yes.
No? 650. Close enough. 600. Do your own maths here. We're losing 2,000 homes. We've only got 600 trucks. We are not coming. We're not going to focus on every single asset. We'll focus. And the example I'll give you here, as much as I've just picked on the SES, now I'm about to pick on CFA, and I do know that the officer in charge of that truck, that's a Drew and West truck there, that's in the middle of the Black Saturday fires. Do you reckon that truck? Well, the first thing to note is which way are they driving?
Wait.
Yeah, they ain't driving towards a fire, are they? And the other thing is, even if they did decide to do, and they're in a strike team to be fair, and there's other trucks with them, even if they did do a UE and go back and decide to go and fight the fire, honestly, it carries 3,000 litres of water. Have a look at it. It ain't, we cannot do it. Understand people. The point I'm trying to make here is we are limited in what we can do in natural disasters. And that is quite confronting to a lot of people. And it's interesting when I look at the fire fatalities here. These are not, when we looked at the Ash Wednesday ones, and so back in 83, most of the people, a lot of the majority of the people, keep in my language, died waiting for us to come and knock on their door and say, this is what you should do. Isn't that sad? Because we were never coming. To this day, Deirdre, we ain't coming. You might be lucky that you'll get a truck come up here because it's an olive grove and we go, oh, we better come and give a hand here. But the reality is this, sorry, I won't pick on you, but have a look at that. The average age is 48. We're not talking elderly, infirm. We're not talking young people that are... We are talking about adult people that should know better about the decisions they make. If you live in a bushfire-prone area, if you live in isolation, plan as if we are not there. Because we cannot do it as an organisation. We cannot do it as a sector. It's interesting that... a couple of other little things, and I'll wind it up, is that everybody else has pretty well been saying this to us for some time. It has been us that hasn't recognised that there needs to be change. When I look at this, Southeast Australia stands out as being an extreme, increased risk of many extreme weather events. We know we're going to get more floods. We know we're going to get more heat waves. We know we're going to get more, heavy bushfires and so on and so forth. The science is there. We only have to look back. It used to be, in my history at the fire service, we used to be every 10 or 20 years we'd have a major event. We had 2003, we had 2006, we had 2009, and that now we run into, in between times, we have floods. There's no let up for us in the sector. We used to be quite parochial, and the fact that the chat we were having before, CFA used to bag SES and SES would bag us, and we never got on with MFB, and God help us with Delta or Depi or whoever the one they call themselves this month, that almost have punch-ups on the fire ground. We're now saying, quite maturely as a sector, we cannot do it on our own. We just can't do it on our own. We need to play team ball with everybody into this space if we move forward. The other one for me was the Bushfire Royal Commission. Again, it's unfortunate that we have to go to a Royal Commission, but the Royal Commission said the agencies need to change their mindset to recognise the most effective way of protecting communities would be through fire... Need to change the mindset to say, hey, the best way of doing it is more fire trucks and more people. Do you know in the US, just go back to my urban example, in 2001 they had this epiphany because they also had 8 minutes for a structure fire. We're going to have three fire trucks on, so I think it's two to be fair, on scene within 8 minutes. What happened was they've gone, oh my God, flashovers occurring in 2 minutes. You know what the response was in the US? Let's make the response time measure 4 minutes. We'll build more fire stations. We'll build more fire trucks. If you throw all that rationale through, we'd actually have to have a fire truck sitting right here at every house in this area. And even then, you'd question, is that value for money? I'd sooner give Deirdre some smoke alarms, an exit route, how to protect your property, some barriers, some education. I'll spend the money on that to make sure she can look after herself rather than 500 grand for a fire truck. Now, this is where you can shoot me, Clem, if you like, but don't tell our people they don't want fire trucks, bombs, tanks and airplanes, we get upset. I reckon there's for 20 minutes. 20 minutes done. Essentially, I guess the point I wanted to make here as a fire service, and I probably overstated it, we do have 1,200 brigades. I would put to you that, and I have travelled a bit of the world, we have quite a unique fire service. It's an integrated fire service, so we look after Melbourne, and we have both career staff, we have volunteers. We provide a fantastic service to this community. As an organiser, this is my last bit, so it was my opportunity to get a little bit parochial. We were sought after and on the ground in Canada last year. We were in Europe last year. We were in the US last year. We went to Tasmania. We went to South Australia. We just went to South Australia again. CFA as an organisation and indeed our partner agencies now are sought after all over the world. And we do it well. We now, it's interesting as we move into other environments and we're looking at Class 2 emergencies, whether it's pandemics or whatever, people are looking to us because we've now become quite well versed at running major events. And if you think about the logistics support, the operational support, the planning that goes into it, the actual running of an incident, you know, the height of Black Saturday, we would have had 4,000 people on the ground at any given time. There's a lot of work to coordinate, and we do it well. And again, I'm a parochial, passionate, proud CFA person to say that. So, you know, a little bit disappointed in the events that have been occurring of late. But the point is, so you'll get a first-class service, but we also, if you want any figure to take away from here, 2,000 homes, 600 trucks. We will do the best we can when we get there, but for goodness sake, people, our communities need to understand, they need to accept responsibility to save their own life, and there'll be decisions you make about you, whether it's a heart attack, whether it's an emergency event of any sort, of the decision you make will determine the outcome as best you can. I reckon I've probably gone over a little bit, Rex, but I'm right on you, pretty close to your 20 minutes. Is that enough?
Yep, that's more than enough. Thank you very much, Steve.
This is a bit I'm not looking forward to.
And now we have questions from the floor. So I guess starting way to our left here.
Good afternoon, Steve. David Ward from Whitefield Herald. The last few years, we've seen signage on clothing of fire brigade members, fire rescue. That's fair enough. Press releases that we've been receiving in recent times are now referring to CFA becoming paramedics and so on and so forth. Where's that trend and why is that coming about? Because the traditional role of firemen was to put the red stuff out. But,
yeah, absolutely.
I don't understand it.
No, thank you for the question. So it's part of, and I talked about a collaboration, if you like. So AV, Ambulance Victoria, recognised that, again, the limitation of a response model, and they've got a thing called PABLES, pre-ambulance basic life support system. And essentially what they're doing is where we can get defibrillators into sporting clubs, social clubs, you know, we'll have them in our fire stations and our fire trucks, etc. It's all part of the overall package to make sure that people, that the first intervention, we can close the intervention time down from 6 minutes to five to four to three. CFA, our records show that I think it's about, we're on scene in our urban areas before the ambulance, about 2.5 minutes quicker. So much as I've just stood here and said, response times are crock, I'm now going to tell you how good response times. If I'm having a heart attack, let me tell you, I want someone there as quick as I can. We're on scene 2.5 minutes quicker. Ambulance approached us some years ago for our, particularly our urban stations, to do EMR, emergency medical response, which is essentially to respond to code zero events. In other words, if you're unconscious and unbreathing. the reality is you will, and potentially now we're training up, it's only in our integrated, well, that's not right. We've got three volunteer stations doing it. We've got funding now to do our integrated stations, and we are hopeful that we'll be able to expand that program out. So essentially, it's putting other strings in the bow of our, particularly our career stations and our firefighters that we recognise that in their downtime, and I'll put to you again, if I lived in Laharam here, I don't know, where would the local ambulance be? Yeah, it's a fair hop, isn't it? Now, if we were in a position to say we had a defibrillator on the CFA truck here, that we're able to respond and we had a duty of care to train, then it's likely that we're going to be the ones that will intervene. So where we have communities push back on that and say we don't want it, someone has a heart attack or an event, then we usually find our brigades come to us and say, we want to be able to provide that service into that community. So I think it's good. You know, we do that in partnership with AV. It's not to, in lieu of, it's to complement the AV model as well. Thanks for the question.
That's right. The only reason I asked it was because the vast majority of brigades around the state are volunteers. And there seems to be a push towards volunteers and rural brigades taking on that service as well.
No. There is so there's funding for the 35 brigades. I've got to say, I am keen for other volunteer brigades. But the first question we ask, are they able to provide their own service? In other words, we're not going to add burden to them. And secondly is, do you want it? And so I probably have more brigades at the moment approaching us to deliver. Colac would be one down there, perhaps in the environment. I won't go through names, but certainly there are a number of brigades that have approached us wanting to do it. Now, we need to be funded to do that and that sort of approach. So we're not going to introduce it into areas that either they can't deliver a fire service or B, they don't want to do it. So no extra burden on volunteers. In fact, we see it as an opportunity for you to recruit people as volunteers that don't want to get on a fire truck but may want to deliver medical services. So I think it's a win-win for all of them.
Okay. We'll just move around. Okay. Just a question over here.
Okay. Yep, I'm from West Riverine Advocate, and I will declare an interest. I just completed my master's bushfire community education. So my query is around the quote that, not the quote you said, but the one that is not through suppression is the way to combat bushfires. My observation is since Black Saturday, that's exactly where all the resources has gone into sheds and trucks, to the point of having them built within 50 metres of the existing community assets and not working together. Like, to me, the response has been preparing for suppression, and we're talking about response. On the flip side, as far as I know, I'm the only person in Australia that has done research since Black Saturday about how community education is actually delivered, and my finding was basically that CFA people tell people what to do and they're not particularly good at listening. And so how does the CFA, while very good at fighting fires and managing incidents, see that they're well designed to deal with that prevention? And I'll use the example of, you said everyone in Victoria knows this fact. My research says everyone in Victoria does not know this,
no,
and particularly young mums, they would be new to Laharum. They may not know anything about Laharum. So how is the CFA, I'm not seeing any evidence of a switch there, and I don't see skills in your organisation, obviously.
A couple of things there is to say, no, you're spot on. So by and large, most
thank you, that's all I need.
Okay. most communities don't even accept that they've got a responsibility. And in many ways, I'll be bold enough to say I have a theory, and it's only obviously very conscious of the environment, but I have a theory that a lot of people in the country are actually safer because they recognise they have to accept their own responsibility than say people that in the city environment that are actually waiting for our response time service. That aside, CFA's done quite a bit. We've actually mandated that every brigade will have a community safety person. So we've got 1,200 brigades. Now we've got every brigade where someone in the brigade accepts the role of community safety. If you went back before Black Saturday, our primary role was suppression. We're saying our service deliveries, our primary role out of our brigades are suppression and empowering the community to be resilient, if you like. We've also done research, so I challenge you on that, Tony, but our research is it's no good shiny bum Steve coming out of headquarters and going to Laharum and saying, hey, this is what we find. It's actually much smarter for the local people in the yellows to walk up with the people they know, the people they trust, to give them that advice. So our issue is giving that information to our people, and a lot of our people have come up through the traditional model, which is, I think, where you've been, and so still have the suppression for us. Our issue is then educating our people that there's limitations in the old service delivery model, as in the suppression, and we need to really focus on, and the fact is, I'm standing here saying that, we've got a community safety department that was separate, is now in under the chief officer. You know, I won't go through all the things, I can give you examples where we're actually looking at, I won't quote a figure given the environment, but it's a substantial number of community safety sessions where we've ramped that up. We're employing and engaging more people to do work in that space. Understand, there's 100 years of history here where people said, hey, we're coming to save your life. It wasn't, as in my time, the policy was we weren't allowed to say anything different. So the world has changed, and I think there's a general recognition of that. But we've got a long way to go, as probably to say. I'm not pushing back, I'm agreeing with you. But perhaps I'll have a talk when we finish. Done.
Okay, so next question, Maurice.
Back in April, May, when the first PDO drum came out, you were part of the CFA management, which signed off on letters saying you were to support the EV in a present form. Then you become chief officer and you still had to switch sides to with the support. Tim Andrews and unions in there pushed the claims. Where do you see the EV going? Like, I know there's a planning board coming up in November. What's your thoughts on what the EV is going to be? Is it going to get a bit torn up and rewritten, or
Now, look, I'm going to answer it this way, Morris, is to say that the reality is I've taken the attitude for some time now that I'm going to let the politicians, the industrialists, the policy makers and the people, if you like, in the head shed in, up in Melbourne at the top end of the town do it. My focus is absolutely, and I'll be frank with you, this has been quite divisive within our organisation. Our focus as an organisation needs to be getting back to where we should be, which is assuring our communities. And I've done a number of, in fact, almost full time talking to brigades and communities, and to every person I would ask, are we going to be there this summer? So I can put my hand on my heart and stand up in a public forum such as this and legitimately say to people, CFA will be there this summer. This, to some extent, is a distraction. I would put to you that it's, I guess the most you're going to get out of me at this moment is it's been disappointing. I'm not here to advocate for VFBV or UFU, I understand, Morris, that I'm not on the VFBV Christmas card list nor the UFU, and I understand that. I'm here to represent our organisation, which provides a service to our community. The reality is the Volunteer Association have taken CFA to the Supreme Court, and that's where those matters will be set. That's where I'll leave it, and that's where they'll be debated and decided. I'm happy to have a chat to you out beyond this, if you like.
I happened to receive an email last night from Greg Smith saying he's going to meet mediation talks with the
And look, this could go on for a long time yet, and so it's important for us to focus on what we do best, which is supporting SES in floods, supporting the summer season. We responded throughout this whole event. We respond to 40,000 calls a year, as you would know, and there's not really one that's been challenged about our ability to continue to provide the service. So it's not lost on me that we do have great people, volunteers, and I think you've heard me say our volunteers are some of the most battle-hardened, experienced people fighting fires anywhere in the world. Our career firefighters are some of the most professionally trained, and put together. CFA, as I've said a few times, we've been sought after and continue to be sought after all over this country and internationally, and that's what we do best. I'm more than happy, and it's disappointing to at this stage say, let the politicians, let the industrial people go and do whatever you're going to do. What it'll be will be. Our job is to make sure we protect CFA, our volunteers, ours, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, so we're
going
to have to move on fairly quickly, but there's been some people in the corner waiting for their questions.
I live in this area and I have a lot of respect for the CFA volunteers. The bushfire crisis is one thing, but if the chimney in my house is on fire, I have to call the CFA, which, and because there's a lot of young people are leaving the area, if my house is on fire, not due to a bushfire, you know, I've got to wait for a couple of 70-year-old volunteers to jump in the truck and come and put out my fire.
She wasn't talking about you, like. And again, I'll answer that in two contexts. One is bushfire, and we've gone up to...
I
just want to take the opportunity to say we've got 47 aircraft in the state. Some of the rationale behind the allocation of the aircraft we do is for exactly that reason. So if I go to the urban space, it is absolutely... There's a couple of things... It's a shame some of this EBA stuff becomes a distraction, because our ability to continue to provide service in declining populations is challenging us. We've just put on another, off the top of my head, 60-odd people almost, and you know, they've been working.
I'm talking about here in this urban. Yeah. I'm not really interested in what's happening in metropolitan.
No, I'm not talking about these people. They're all placed in, I've got them in Horsham, I've got them in Ararat, they're placed in, and their almost sole purpose is to review our service delivery model into those areas that are in rural decline. So it's a huge issue for CFA. If I look at southwest of Victoria, where we had 100 farms are now just blue gum plantations with managers. What that does is those 100 farms would have had mum, dad, a couple of kids join CFA, join the football club. They're gone. And so we struggled then to get a truck out the door into that space. We've gone to the Blue Gums and said, hey, you need the help. We're looking to how we get, we put some more aircraft on. We're looking to how we recruit or maintain or get different people into that space. The service delivery challenges for SES, for CFA, for SES, for ambulance in some of these spaces are significant for us. We don't have the silver bullet to fix it, but I guess the starting point.
So you're saying in an incident, a non-bushfire incident, my house catches on fire, clearly our responsibility for that.
No, we will be there. It'll be we'll absolutely I look at the locals because they'll know their response time better. We will be there, and at Chimney Fire you've probably got time because of the construction of it. But the reality is, in a lot of these places, you can have flashover occurring in 2 or 3 minutes. We don't even have to be at the door. It's 4 minutes before the fire truck even has to be at the door, assuming someone's actually rung up. The point I'm making is to say there has to be an element in your home, depending on where you live, where you do accept some responsibility. I don't care. Insurance companies won't like to say this. It's about your life, which is important. So we would say, ring the fire service. We'll come up, and when we turn up, we'll do a great job. But there will be a time lag before we get up. And you see, every time you see a house fire on the telly, it's usually going like a steam train as we turn up. It's too late.
Okay, well, John's been waiting for a minute, but we're really running out of time, so we have to rapidly progress to make sure we answer as many questions as possible. So,
keep John,
Okay,
bit of feedback rather than a question. Steve, thanks for coming to our municipality. Just to follow up from David's comment before about diversity, and you mentioned as well support role in floods, I just want to pass on the appreciation that the CFA do in terms of their role with floods. We had an event here recently where CFA officers were incident controllers for a start in the event, and the volunteers were certainly very active around the place as well too. So there's a lot of appreciation for the role of CFA in a broader area than just fires. Just a comment I'd like to leave you with, though, communication is a key element. Education communication is a key element. A few people are playing around with their phones here at the moment. They're lucky. If they were a little bit further down the valley, they wouldn't have a phone signal in this area. So,
well, we've got Steve here from Telstra who's been working on the black spots. He's
if you can take a message out of the communication in some of our rural areas, this is a black spot area, and if Telstra can help us with that,
Steve actually might be a better place to answer that. Not that I'm putting you on the spot, but I know Telstra has invested significantly around Horsham. We're only talking about before is large investment in this area, looking at the back black spot.
But just not in this particular area around here where the bushfire came over the hill.
I'm going to leave that.
Yeah, I can talk to you about that.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, next, Michael.
Steve, you talk about the more dangerous fires with climate change and whatever have you. Is there been any thoughts, and it's to do with more DNOE or growth or whatever they're called, but to me it seems that we have to respond to lightning strikes, and this was a lightning strike going on here, of course, and we have the technology to know where those lightning strikes are. Has there been any thoughts to having crews and even helicopter crews? I think there might be about 3 in Victoria, but we'd need far more of that type of thing to respond to lightning strikes, even at night time if we have to. Because, the way DNRE and let fires go and let them develop before they actually go and put them out,
I'm smiling, Michael, because I'm almost assuming that the Commissioner has asked you to ask that question. The Commissioner himself is a personal advocate for what they call night vision goggles, and essentially what he is saying is that we have about 57 aircraft spread right across the state, including the big DC-10s or the LATs sitting at Avalon to the Elvises, the aircraft. We've got aircraft everywhere that then sit on the deck at night. And he's saying we're only getting maximising 50% of their usage. So he is very keen this summer to do a trial with night vision so we can fly at night. What we do at the moment, you're right, we'll track with the Bureau of Meteorology system, we'll track where lightning goes through. Where we see that happen, as soon as daylight, we'll put an aircraft over it and they'll plot where small fires in, and we can either rappel crews in if they're remote areas, we can send trucks in. But of course, this was a classic. I mean, this was a difficult spot, hard to get at. And the thing, you know, Rob's actually got some, if you get a chance, he's brought some great photos. Actually, Deirdre, you might want to see his photos, of the, if you haven't seen them already, of the fire that actually occurred here. And you get a sense in a time sequencing sense how quickly this thing got up and running. But look, to answer the short answer to your question, sorry, Rex, the short answer, yes, we're looking to pilot night vision flying this. CASA are monitoring it, they're quite concerned. But yeah, we're having absolutely, and can I say, trailblazing it, no one else in Australia has done that before, but we'll attempt to have a go at that this summer. Yeah, good question.
Okay,
you
probably have
to get
the last question. Luke?
Two quick questions. We've heard many rumours that when the SkyCraft engine is based on our and leading shortly to the Rabbit. And the second part is, what are you expecting from this current fire season?
Yes, you are right. Thanks for the hot topic. I thought I nearly got away with it. Certainly, there's probably a certain person in this room that I might be looking at that might have written us letters of... anyway, we won't pick on poor old Kev here. The reality is, what we have at the moment on the deck is, last season we had the Elvis, for those we call the air crane. It delivers about 9 tonne of water. It takes time to power up. What we've gone to in Victoria is that priority dispatch program. Essentially what that is we used to... I'll pick on you, because you're here. It used to be that Kevin would pull up in his fire truck here, make an assessment and go, yep, we'll call for an aircraft. It radios back into the state go to the air, there, goes to the helicopter, you almost Battle of Britain stuff, and they run out and they jump in and they do whatever they do to get the helicopter up. Time and space. What we do now in Victoria, and they're going to try this year out of Ballarat into the west, is that on a trigger point day, the day that Kev's pager goes off, at the same time the pager goes off, they'll dispatch the aircraft automatically. So it's an automatic dispatch. And so what we're doing is we're putting an aircraft over the top quite often before a fire truck gets there. Now that pees the fire crews off, because the reality is you don't like them. They don't like it when someone drops water or retardant on top of them while they're working. But the science, we've done this now for a couple of years. The science tells us that our ability to extinguish a fire quickly before the trucks get on, or at least hold it, is absolutely saving good coin in the state. So it's hard to quantify, because if you didn't put it out quickly and it got away, here's a great example. We've lost, Deirdre talked before, we've lost, income to a community, and it's much more than income. I think it's from the heart, so I felt that. It has a huge impact. If we could stop that fire by having a priority dispatch program, we're doing it. And so that... people like to see the big orange aircraft, and if it's a bad day, we will still move Elvis out of Essendon and put it back at Ballarat. But it's topical, because we like to see a big aircraft. That's my view, and that was not necessarily shared by everybody.
Smaller aircraft.
Well, you can't. Sorry, the big Elvis is not a priority dispatch. It takes time to wind up. It's a time and space. If we take that out, we put other aircraft in that can lift off the deck straight away. So we'll be hit. Speed versus weight of attack. So it's that argument. So we'll do that. And if we have to put it back, we'll put it back. Your second question, just quickly, our view is it'll be almost a traditional summer. We're looking January, February, March. And understand, I keep reinforcing, CFA is one of the biggest urban fire services in Australasia, and so it's almost a fallacy that we're a bushfire service. But this summer, we think there's a prolific growth. We think the forests are not too bad. The big issue will be grass. The big issue with the western part of the state, the big issue is I'm standing in the middle of it, where our concerns are. From here, right, pretty well South Australian border, right through to Ballarat, huge amount of growth. He's getting towed, so I might. But so traditional season, this time last year, October, we might have been a belt turn off, but we won't talk about that. At Lancefield, we lost houses in October, and we continued right through till May. This year, we're still helping the SES out of floods. We're still heavily involved in floods, and all our people are. Thanks, Mike. Sorry.
No, that's all right. Well, thank you very much to Steve for coming.